I've got Jack Brown on today. We're going to talk about diving and recreational diving. Is that right?
Yeah.
I never heard of recreational diving, so it's going to be a real good chat with you about that. You've been doing it for some years. You're a young man compared to me. I'm 44 and you're 20, what?
22.
So you are half my age. basically, when you first told me about this, you're a colleague of mine at work, I was fascinated. I'm also petrified by going into enclosed spaces and underwater, especially under ships. And I find the whole diving scene interesting. So I've got Jack on just to talk about where he goes, what he does, the adventures, the mishaps, the techniques he uses. So it should be an interesting chat. So what got you into diving?
It was never really anything that I sort of looked into doing. So I've been diving 10 years now. So I started diving when I was around 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And we'd gone on a family holiday. Me, my parents, my sister, were all out in St. Lucia. And we're having our holiday. My dad wants to go diving. He sees that the hotel or the resort we're in, they do try dives. Mm-hmm. So where they'll give you all the kit, they'll take you in the water.
Yeah, was your dad a diver?
No,
before
so he's
that?
Never okay. done it before. None okay. of us have ever dived before
okay.
at this point.
Okay.
And he asked me if I wanted to go, and for some reason I said no. So he went off and did a try dive.
Yeah.
And I still remember he came back from his try dive and we sat around the pool in St. Lucia. I can picture it. And he sat there and he goes, "It's like swimming in an aquarium," and that's just always stuck in my head since then. So he went, "Oh, once I get back to the UK, I'm gonna look into it, take up diving. There's some clubs around or whatever. Mm-hmm. Look into it and we'll start. Do you want to try it?" So the first time I even tried diving was in England in a women's swimming pool. I tried
really?
It in a swimming pool
okay.
for the first time. It was a 1.5 meter swimming pool, so it wasn't even deep. It was at some private school, Heath Mountain.
So was this to get a qualification or was this just
this
practice?
Was just a try dive.
Just
this
a try
was
dive.
The first time I've ever been in the water with my unit. So we get this pool. And they get all the kit. They put you in because you're in a nice heated swimming pool. You don't need like a wetsuit or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you your kit. They set it up for you and basically get you in the water, stand you up because it's you can stand up in this pool.
Yeah.
And they say just sort of put your head under, see if you can breathe. And it goes all right. And they go all right. Now put your whole body in, sort of thing. Just sort of lay on the ground in this pool.
Yeah.
And see if you're happy breathing because a lot mm-hmm. of people don't like the feel of breathing through a regulator. It's
yeah.
The
yeah.
Mouth, the regulator.
Yeah.
And so it sort of just started from there, and then we started going weekly, and we sort of from there went, right, we want to get our sort of first certification, our first mm. license, which is, mm. I did it with Paddy, one of the organisations, and the first one's European Water Diver. So we sort of started going weekly, and yeah, that's how it all started, just went from there.
So is it costly? Is it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the certifications aren't too bad. It's the kit that's expensive. So I think when I was doing it anyway, it was about £100 to do your open water dive, and that included all the actual dives as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you've got to do, I think it is, after you've proven your skills, you've got to do four dives in a swimming pool. It's called confined water, closed water.
Yeah.
And you've got to do four open water dives,
mm-hmm.
Which is like it could be a flooded quarry, it could be the sea, just actual environment.
Hold on, a flooded quarry?
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Why does that sound so dangerous to me?
It's not, it's fine.
Right,
so it's
okay.
Basically disused quarries from whenever they would have closed down.
Because I'm surrounded by quarries in
yeah.
Kent where I live.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know of any down there. Probably are, but I don't know of any down there. How many are flooded? But yeah, so...
Well, they're building houses on them now, so...
I don't think they're very diveable then, I'll be honest.
No, no.
Nah. But yeah, so open water dives are sort of just anything that's open to the environment. Like natural pools and whatnot, or the sea, and then closed water dives. You're sort of looking more at swimming pools and
okay.
controlled places.
Okay. So how far between when you qualified and then when you went into the sea? Because I'm guessing the sea is the most not dangerous, but kind of next level.
Well, that's what I mean. So it's open water. It's you got tides, you got waves, and everything. It's not even like in a quarry or whatever where it's sort of. It's still a body of water, it's fresh water.
Yeah.
With the sea, obviously, you got all the currents that you can deal with and waves and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that long, to be honest. I think most of my first dives were all in quarries because they were easiest for us to get to. They're fairly close to home, so being when I'm training and doing my courses and all that, it's good to be not too far, so you haven't, like, if it goes wrong or say you, one of your dives gets scrapped, you haven't gone all the way down to the south coast or whatever just to scrap your dives off. But it would have been in the first couple of months after getting my course, at least I would go into the sea. We went and did Weymouth and Swanage and down the south coast and all that, and Chesil Beach. Done a load of them there a few times now. That was sort of first lot.
Was that summertime or wintertime or?
Oh God, no, you're testing me. I know it was cold because at this point I didn't have a dry suit. So if you know the difference or not, you got wetsuits and dry suits. Wetsuits are what you sort of know I'm talking about, like surfers wearing and all that. Dry suits, they basically, they seal at your neck and at your wrist, and they've got integrated boots. And it's just like a big bag, essentially, without going into the details of them. And they keep you dry, so they got a proper zip that you get in through. You open the zip up, get in, and then it's got a full on airtight zip. I think it's the same zip they use on spacesuits, or used to use on spacesuits, because it has to be. You can't let the water in, obviously.
Right.
So and then you can wear sort of more thermal kit underneath that. So I know at the time when I was doing my dives and all that, I was blooming freezing because I'm a small bloke. I get cold easy, and I was we were in the sea, and it was cold. It was probably around, water temperature was around 14 degrees.
Do you test the water before you get in?
No, not usually. We might look it up. Also, if you go to like the quarries, they'll have it on a board somewhere, or the water temperature today is here, this depth and here. Or we'll look it up online before we go. And then when you're diving, you've got like a computer to tell you sort of how long you've been down there, what depth you're at and all that.
What's the computer?
It's like a wrist computer. I got a few of them. And they'll tell you stuff like your water temperature as well when you're in there. So I can, on the dive, I can see that it's if it's nice and warm, it's like 23 degrees. Or I can see that when we do our Christmas dip, it's 3 degrees. Why we do that, I don't know. Christmas dip. I have never broken ice to get in, though.
You've never broken ice?
No, I've never broken ice to go for a dive.
Where was the Christmas dip? Where did you do that?
We normally do it at our local, one of the more local quarries. I think it's in Leicester. I don't know. I'm not normally on the dive.
So do you meet other people there as well?
Yes. So the quarries are open to any divers, sort of thing. So normally you go to these, and they're set up as dive locations now. So you go there, and there's a car park full of everyone in their dry suits, wetsuits, setting up their kit, and there's hundreds of people diving there.
And what do you see in a quarry? I mean, the quarry is quite dark, isn't it?
Yeah. So well, in England it's quite dark. So the quarries are, as I said, they're usually, once they're flooded, they're set up as dive sites. So you get like, They put stuff in there for you to look around. So there's loads of, like, the one I was just diving at the weekend, actually. I was in South Wales in the National Diving Activity Centre. Over in Chepstow. And they, in there, they've got like two helicopters, wreckage of helicopters. They've got military vehicles. They've got plane fuselages.
Under the water?
Yeah, they're completely submerged. And you can swim through them. They got ISO containers, but without the front or back doors on, so you can just swim through. Typing, like, one of the dive sites, Vogstar.
And is this your practicing, or you just enjoy that environment?
Both. It's good to keep up the skills, good to keep getting in the water regularly. So because with my equipment, which I'll chat about later, I'm sure, but my equipment's quite complicated, so it's good for me to keep on top of it, make sure it's still in service and everything like that. But yes, it's good to get in the water, and also you go and do stuff like this. There's a group of sort of, I dive with the same sort of 3-4 guys all the time. We go on the same holidays. One of them being my dad, he's still diving.
So you're giving me an impression that you need to trust your fellow divers as well.
Yeah. So you should never, what they tell you right from the start is you should never sort of dive alone. You should always have, what you call it, they're just always called a buddy. You've got a dive buddy.
Yes.
And so for me, I'm like, it's always been my dad. My dad's pretty much always been my dive buddy.
Well, if anyone's going to rescue you, it's your dad, isn't it?
I hope so.
Yeah.
But yeah, so once we dive, we sort of joined a group in Stevenage, where we live. And that group's called Finn Divers, and we joined them. And we met a few other guys, and then we sort of started diving on our own. Not so much with the club. It was just, and then it just became what it is now, which is a group of four mates. We see each other, like everyone's girlfriends, wives get along. We go out for drinks, meals, and all that. But we know each other through diving. We have diving weekends, diving holidays together. And so I'm always with the same guys. So I trust all of them in my life now. Yeah. I'll dive with any of them any day happily.
Yeah, you build up a quite close knit relationship with these people.
Yeah, definitely. Because obviously, there's times when your normal buddy, like my dad, won't make a dive, or he might be, or his dive unit might fail or something like that.
Yeah.
So I won't then scrap a dive just because he can't make it. If there's other guys, I'll dive with them. I'll happily dive with any of that lot.
Interesting.
You do learn to trust your divers. It's weird because you can't really communicate underwater. Well, you've got a mouthpiece into breeze, you're underwater and all that. But you learn how each other dive. Like I can watch one of my mates diving, and I have done this. I've seen a diver, one of my mates, it was my dad actually, I saw him diving and something just wasn't right. And I could tell, I could just tell that he wasn't being his normal self underwater. And I went and checked him out.
So are there signals? Are there signals for this then?
Yeah, so you got, I mean, obviously we're not filming this, so for the sake of our experience, so you got shaking your hand like this, so it's flat and you shake it side to side. Okay. That's like a problem.
Right.
In basic, everyone goes to is okay. Question and answer.
Yeah, that's a problem in Cyprus as well.
Yeah.
If I see someone across the road
and they're doing that,
and I go like that, I go, it usually means you're going to get done over in a minute. I'm going to come over and knock you out, kind of thing.
Nice.
But yeah, go on. So yeah.
Yeah. So you got, so that's like, I got a problem there. If you got a problem, say you're going under pressure and your ears aren't like popping properly.
Yeah.
You got a problem ears, or say you've got a cramp. Cramp is like squeezing that.
Yeah.
So
are these national or are these things you've made up?
No, these are national. This is what you taught. Obviously, there's always a bit of variance.
So are they in a book? Are they in a book somewhere?
Yeah. So when you do your dive training, they have pictures in there. It's like a training manual sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it shows you your basics. So this is okay. And it has a little animated cartoon type thing. So that's okay. No, so that's a problem.
Yeah.
You're okay. Out of air is like chopper thread.
Okay.
Then up, down. So that's the one that a lot of people struggle with at first. Normally, you like are on the street, you like, thumbs up is, yeah, you're right, mate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But underwater, that means ascend. Like, that means
thumbs up.
Either go up as in just come up a bit, or go up as in I'm going to the end of the dive.
Is that you going up, or you're saying to that person, go up?
It's a weird one. Again, it's sort of, you understand it to the context at the time. Like if my mate's quite low down and I say I think he's reaching his limit or whatever, or I know that I've got to come up, I'll get his attention. And if I sort of do this, it's almost like the further away my hand is, this isn't like the rules or anything, it's just thinking about it, sort of the way it goes. If I'm sort of going up that and I'm looking at him, it's like, oh, maybe you should come up, and then you can say, I'll level off. So that's the way you just flat hand like that, level off.
Jack's holding his hand out basically like a flat.
Yeah.
Kind of,
side to side of it.
Yeah.
And then, whereas if I'm like, I might point to myself sometimes like I'm going up, but normally I won't go up to the surface unless it's the end of the dive, and then the guys will know it's the end of the dive as well. Because if I'm done with the dive, I'm like, oh, I'm cold, so I'm just shaking I'm rubbing my shoulders or my arms. If I'm like that, I'm cold, and then I'll go up, and then I'll go like that, I'm going up. Or if I'm running low on air, so you got to signal how much air you've got sometimes. So if someone holds out their like left hand and then with two fingers taps their palm like that, then they're asking you how much air you've got. And then so you've got, because it's measured in bar, so the pressure, the air you've got in your cylinder is measured in bar. And so you got, that's 100 bar. 50 bar is a, so 100 bar is like a T.
So
with
a T with your hand, yeah.
50 bar is it's like just a closed fist,
yeah.
And then after that, you've just got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on your index fingers.
Okay.
So if I go, I've got that, which is your T, your fist, and your two, I've just said I've got 150, 60, 70 bar.
Okay.
And typically, you just learn this when you're doing it. Typically, you'll start with around 200 bar. You're supposed to get out with at least 50 bar left because it's supposed to be your reserve. You shouldn't go into that. That's sort of your backup in case something's happening.
Okay.
So typically,
and 50 bar, how long would that last?
Depends on your depth, because the air is compressed, but your lungs are constantly cycling through air. They're not compressed because of the pressure underwater. So you're sucking out more air at depth than you are if you're like at a higher depth.
Right. Okay. So it's all down to the depth.
Yeah.
And
also it depends on the conditions. You'll use more air in cold water because your body's breathing more, your body's trying to heat up more.
Okay.
If you're going swimming against the current, that's like doing a marathon. You're panting more, breathing more.
Yeah.
So it really does vary. But I mean, typically when I was still diving on a normal cylinder, a 12 litre cylinder, which is sort of your normal size.
Yeah.
Feels started at 200, 210 bar.
Yeah.
Normal conditions, say 18 degrees, whatever, maybe even cold, a little bit colder than that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably get about 45 minutes to an hour on it.
Yeah.
On that cylinder, and still have some coming out.
Okay. Because, I mean, we've started on the next question. My next question was basically about the depths of dive and the equipment.
Yeah.
So your equipment now is far advanced to when you first started.
Yeah. So obviously your basic stuff like your fins and your mask are all the same. It's exactly what you'd expect. If you're snorkeling, you've got normal mask, normal fins. Don't call them flippers. Yeah. People call them flippers. It pisses me off.
They're called fins.
Fins, yeah.
Fins, okay.
Yeah. All right. Oh, I don't know what it is. It always gets me, that one. But yeah, so you got your fins, and then normal divers will have their, like, a cylinder. So that's the tank on your back.
Yeah.
And then you'll have your regulator, which attaches to the top of that. And that's got, like, sort of three or four things coming off of it. One of them is your regulator. I just said regulator, didn't I? Yeah, that's the regulators as a group. So one of them is your mouthpiece, which would be your air through. You've then got another one of those, a bright yellow one normally, another regulator, which is a spare. So say I'm diving with you, and you run out of air. Instead of me having to give you mine and we share, I've got a spare one. And if there's a problem with that, you that's the dive anyway, you're coming up, because you're not going to share a cylinder with someone.
No.
So you've got a spare one for if anyone needs it. You've got a SPG normally, which is your submersible pressure gauge.
Yeah.
Which is basically just a gauge showing you how much air you've got left in terms of your pressure. Sometimes you have a computer or a compass on that, on one there as well.
Okay.
So that's your regulators and all that. And then your tank, and then it's all attached to the jacket. It's called your BCD, is what it typically is, a buoyancy controlled device.
Yeah.
So that's a jacket that you can inflate and deflate with a hose. So that's attached to your cylinder as well.
Okay.
And you can, if you say you want to float, or you want to go up, so you want to send, you can fill up your jacket a bit. And
with the tanks.
Yeah.
Yes, with the tank, you fill up the jacket.
Yeah, so there's a hose coming from your tank and your regulator. There's one hose that comes and connects to your inflator on your jacket.
So you've got less time to breathe through your tank because you've got
but that's not a constant thing. You've got a button and you can sort of put it in when you want, and it doesn't take a lot to sort of inflate your jacket, so it's very minimal. It is true that if you're really really running low on air, or you think you're pretty much out, or say you've got none, you won't be able to inflate your jacket. But they do have a mouthpiece on as well, so you can take your regulator out, put your mouthpiece from your jacket in, and manually blow it up. So you have to press a button down and blow into it and then you have to put your regulator back in if you're still underwater at that point.
Okay.
So there's a bit of a swap over. So that's the sort of skills that you got to learn when you're diving as well. When you're doing your course, like say your mask gets a little water in it, you got to learn how to empty the water out your mask while you're underwater.
Is that something that everyone learns, or is it just because you're a recreation diver?
No, that's everything everyone learns. That's sort of the very basic things you learn right at the beginning in the swimming pool, how to manually do this. What happens if you run out of air? How you can manually inflate your jacket, how you empty your mask from, if you've got a leak in your mask, the water's coming in, it's filling up, you can empty it out. So you sort of pinch the top, pull the bottom out away from your top lip, and then you blow through your nose and it sort of flushes the water out.
Right, okay. They're the sort of things I've had problems with.
People do struggle with that bit. But that's right at the beginning, getting used to it. I mean, I do it second nature now, but it's just a lot of doing it.
Okay. And your tank, what tank you got now?
I don't really dive on it. I mean, I do have a cylinder now, a tank, but I don't really dive on one anymore. So that's how I used to dive. I had a 15-litre cylinder and all the regulating that. I just
is that quite heavy? Is that,
it can be. Obviously, the bigger cylinders are heavier and they're normally steel cylinders. Aluminium ones you can get as well, but they're thicker. The walls of them are thicker because obviously it's got to take the same amount of pressure and it's a softer material. How heavy would I say that is? You're probably looking at sort of 25 kilos ish. I'm trying to compare it to some luggage. Maybe a bit less, probably about 20
kilos. So it helps you sink in a way as well, doesn't it?
In a sense. But to help you get down, you've also got a weight belt, so you literally strap lead weights to yourself. We call them lead weights, they're not lead anymore, but you literally strap weight onto you.
I didn't know that.
Because neoprene is what most wetsuits are made out of. It's extremely, it floats a lot. Your jacket, you're filling with air. So you want to get a good mix between floating and sinking, essentially. So you get neutrally buoyant, so you're right in the middle.
Okay.
And you do that by having weight attached to you, but then at the same time you put a little bit of air into your jacket.
Yeah.
And then you sort of, again, with practice you get used to it, but you sort of learn to be in that middle ground where you're sort of just floating in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the best way to dive, because you're not constantly trying to swim up or down. You don't end up going up too fast before you know it and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so with my unit, as you'll have noticed, I'm calling it a unit.
Yes.
So I've got a rebreather now. So I've got a recreational rebreather. So the point of a rebreather is, you use a lot less air. You don't, in fact, you barely use any fresh air, should we say? Because what I do is I've instead of having one hose in and then just breathing bubbles out, I don't breathe out bubbles. So the bubbles then go through another tube out. So it comes in. The inhaler's on the left. comes in into my regulator. Mm-hmm. I breathe it in, breathe it out. It's got a two-way valve on the inside of my mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes out back into my unit. Mm-hmm. It goes through, we call it a scrubber. And it's filled with this, it looks like cat litter, this stuff called softener lime.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically scrubs the excess CO2 out of the air I've just exhaled.
Mm-hmm.
It then pumps it back into like a lung system. It's got two sealed bags.
Yeah.
And then that I then breathe that back in. Obviously, over time, I am using the oxygen. So I've got a very small cylinder strapped to the bottom of that.
Yeah.
And that every now and then, because it's got a special computer, it's got O2 sensors, CO2 sensors on everything. It calculates how much air I'm breathing in, what percentage of air mixture I'm on. And it'll just squirt in, and you'll be able to hear it go, and it'll just squirt in every now and then a little bit more air to keep the system topped up with air. But most of the time, I'm just rebreathing it.
So does that mean you can go down for longer?
Yeah, yeah. So typically, as I said earlier, on a 12 or 15 litre cylinder, I could dive for 45 minutes. With my rebreather, mine's sort of it's a recreational rebreather. You can get some serious tech ones, but I don't do technical diving. But with my one, I could probably double that. I could probably do 2 hours, 3 hours on my rebreather with a cylinder that's a third of the size.
Have you ever done it?
No. I've done an hour and a half.
Hour and a half. Where was that?
That was out in Malta.
In Malta.
Go and dive in, well, Gozo. But I go and dive in Gozo a lot. Malta, Gozo.
Yeah. And what dive sites are out there? What kind of things are you looking for there?
Gozo's it's obviously a small island. There's just diving all around it. So there's some rock formations. There's this one called, we call it the middle finger, because when you go deep enough, it's literally like a middle finger.
Yeah, yeah.
And the top of this middle finger, this rock formation, is probably about 8 meters. But the bottom's down at 40, and it's just this massive pinnacle, probably like diameter of two of these offices. And we start at the bottom, or not at the very bottom, but we start at a lower depth, and we sort of spiral our way up, because you're supposed to go up during your dive anyway, slowly. It's the best dive profile, start at the bottom and work your way up slow.
Okay.
So we'd start at the bottom and we'd just swim spiraling up slowly. You get low, because it's a little bit out into the sea a bit more, you get some big life, you get a lot of fish life out there. But there's also out on Gozo, there's shipwrecks and all that as well, which we've done a fair amount of.
Okay. Mm. That's interesting. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But so what's the depths you go to then? What kind of depths are you going to now then?
Well, when you do your open water dive certification, as I said earlier, you're certified to go to, I think it's 18 metres. I want to say 18 metres. I could be wrong. It's more like I go now. But it's about 18 metres, I think.
Yeah.
You then do another course, and they teach you. They sort of help you refine your skills and all that. Teach you a bit more, and that's with the organisation I'm using anyway, Paddy. That's your advanced open water.
Mm-hmm.
So that qualifies you to go down to 30 metres. That's the deepest you should go without doing another course. If you do the next course, you can do for depth is literally called your deep dive course, and that certifies you to go down to 40 metres in depth.
Mm-hmm.
Anything past 40 metres is considered technical diving, and you should have tech dive training for that.
Okay, all right.
Which isn't what I do. As I said, you can get there's a lot of diving you can do. I know people that have done it, but they're diving like helium mixture gases, trimix they call it. So I can't remember what the mixes are, but it's obviously O2, helium, and nitrogen, I'd assume.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, and what's in your tank?
I dive nitrox, so it's basically it's O2.
Yeah,
it's normal air, but it's got a higher percentage of O2.
Okay.
So I and that's another course you've got to do. It's all courses.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a course that I've done, and I'm now certified to dive up to a 40% oxygen mixture. Obviously, normal air is 21%,
mm-hmm.
so I can dive almost double the amount of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
But then that has its own risks, which is why you need a course for it. So oxygen. I'm sure you've heard about oxygen poisoning, oxygen toxicity.
I don't know anything about it.
It's not necessarily diving related. It's just oxygen in general. Like if we obviously, as you know, we needed O2 and like nitrogen in the air. If you were breathing 100% oxygen constantly, you'd kill over and die. It would just poison you. I can't remember the science behind it. I'm not going to lie about that.
No.
So, and because of the way that your body absorbs the gases you're breathing underwater because of the pressure you're under,
mm-hmm.
Which is sort of how you get the bends, decompression illness. So nitrogen gets absorbed into the body, oxygen gets absorbed into the body. You've got a partial pressure of oxygen, which is complicated. It goes a little bit over my head. I did the training on it, and I sort of, but basically, the higher oxygen percentage you got in your gas cylinder, the shallower you have to stay.
Yeah.
Because if you go too deep, you got a higher amount of oxygen, it absorbs into your body more, okay, you then get oxygen poisoning.
Yeah.
Because you've absorbed more oxygen and you're not letting it out because you're under pressure.
Okay.
So depending on what mixture. So if I'm at 40% O2, I probably can't go past like 22-ish meters. I typically dive in about 32%,
mm-hmm,
and that'll let me go down to about 36 meters, I want to say.
So how do you know what percentage you've got? Is it on the computer?
So we've got an analyzer. So it's my rebreather, my unit, as I said, it's got O2 sensors and CO2 mm-hmm, sensors. So that will run through the gas and it'll tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but also when I get a new cylinder, we've got, it's just an O2 reader and we hold it on. We crack the air open a little bit so the air is running over this O2 sensor and mm-hmm, it will then read out how much
and air you can adjust it with a valve. Is it a valve or something?
Yeah, no. So when I get the cylinder filled up,
yeah,
I have to tell the guy filling up, the compressing my cylinder to filling up.
Okay.
I want it at 32%, and they'll normally do it plus or minus 1% or whatever.
Okay. So and there's special shops for this.
So most dive centers will do nitrox, which is what I'm talking about now. Nitrox is pretty common.
Okay. So, how do you find places to dive in? How do you
recommendation? Google, nothing really too specific. I mean, we've got between the group that dive, as I said earlier, we've got a few dive like books or locations, and we've all got our own bucket lists. But it's a lot of times, so you meet people from other dive shops. You're on holiday, you meet another diver.
Yeah.
They go, "Oh, I was here this time. It's really good." Really, there's the really well known places that everyone knows about as well. Like,
what are they?
Egypt.
Yeah.
The Red Sea is known for diving.
Yes.
There's a lot of life.
Even I know that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of life, warm water, and everything. Then you got stuff like Thailand, whale sharks and all that. Mexico has the cenotes, which is a cave system.
Mm-hmm.
You got Caribbean in general. You can sort of just figure out, even if you're not a diver, think what's got nice warm water.
Yeah.
And most of the time you'll get some diving around there.
Yeah. What's the most dangerous place to dive, do you think? Is there somewhere you've
it sort of depends on your training to an extent, but caves are typically pretty dangerous.
Yes.
And sort of people that go into like too deep and they sort of get disorientated or go into a cave system too deep and they can't get out in time or get lost, sort of that.
Yeah. Okay.
And then there's also I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there's sort of places that have like too much current. It's really impossible to swim against or whatever, and you sort of just get dragged away with it.
Yeah.
But that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So what's on your bucket list then?
Mexico, the cenotes, which I just mentioned there.
Okay.
So that's a cave system, but it's obviously it does go into a full cave formations, really deep and everything like that. But for most of it, it's open. It's almost open caves, so it's through the jungle in Mexico and whatnot, and through parts you can see the jungle above you. So there is a surface.
Okay, I'll let you into a secret. I've been to them.
Have you?
I've been inside. I've swam through them. Yes. I haven't dived, but I've been to them. And I remember
they're fresh water, aren't they? They're not salt water.
They're fresh water.
Which is weird.
So you can't see anything because it's black. It's really black.
Yeah.
And you go down these stairs and you go into a cave.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually in the, it's like a well.
Yeah.
And so you can see the sky through the top of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're quite deep down.
Yeah, I know.
And there's water, and then from that, if they say to you, if you dive under here, you've got about 10 meters of cave underwater,
and it goes to another
opening. So we were like, I was only 21, 22 when me and my girlfriend went, and we went, and it was very interesting.
Cenotes is top of my list because it's crystal clear water because it's fresh water.
Yes.
It's all filtered down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen pictures of it, and my family have actually been twice without me, which I'm not happy about. Well, I've moved out now, so they can't afford my old days anymore.
How long have you been diving, by the way?
10 years. 10 years.
10 years.
I learned when I was about 12 or 13.
Oh, blimey. So you're more or less, from where I'm sitting, you're an expert on diving.
I would say I'm pretty experienced. I've sort of got, I'd say, near 350, 400 dives under my belt.
So do they wrap that up by hours?
Where you're supposed to have a dive log, a log book. Which you talk from the start, you fill after every dive, you're supposed to fill it out, and you'll have a counter in the corner how many dives you're on. It gets to a point that everyone who's doing a lot of diving sort of just stops logging their dives, and I definitely stopped on about 150, I reckon. 150 dives I probably stopped. But you sort of roughly keep counting in your head. Like, I know that was 150. God, that was probably like six-ish years ago. And I know I'm still diving a fairly consistent amount, and it's sort of 10 years now. So I know other guys have sort of kept count, because some of your like dive computers, as I explained earlier, they'll keep count and all that. But yeah, so I'm guesstimating I'm around 350 dives, 350, maybe 400.
Wow. That's amazing. My wife loves diving. She's done it a couple of times, and she really loved it. She wants to take me, but I'm kind of thinking,
do it.
Maybe I should do it. I mean, I'm flying to Dubai in a couple of weeks' time, and that's a good place to learn.
There, yeah.
Although I don't have to do that, because they've got underwater restaurants, so I just pretend I'm diving and
look out the window.
So have you got any idols in the diving world? Have you got anyone that you look at and go, I'd love to like be like him and do what he's done? And
not specifically idols as people, it's more things people have done that I want to do.
So what's on your apart from the caves?
Well, going back to cenotes, so I've really wanted to do it, because there's something weird about that, right? And the cenotes, when they get near the sea, the salt water and the fresh water mix.
Yeah.
The salt water from the sea is denser. So you're swimming in this crystal clear water. So if it wasn't for the fact you can see bubbles from people, you'd think these people are just floating through air. It's crystal clear. And then you look down, and you bear in mind, you know that you're, what, 10 metres underwater. You look down, and there's a puddle. Underwater, you're underwater, and there's a puddle. The way that some of the salt water has come in to the fresh water, it's been dragged through from water currents or whatever. And because it's more dense, it's denser, it sinks to the bottom and forms a puddle underwater. And I really want to see that.
Okay. So is there any plans?
I haven't got any yet. I want to go in the next couple of years.
Because Mexico's cheap to get to now.
Yeah, no, I know.
And it's cheap to stay there.
Yeah. I do want to do it. This is a lot of holidays I want to do.
So where are the cave systems? Are they all over Mexico? Because I went to Cancun, and then we had a 3-hour drive from the hotel
to the cenotes. For the diving is the main one. It's that it's a big area. They go over a big place. There's a really big cave system.
Yeah,
it's called the cenotes. And that's pretty much where everyone is diving for that one.
Okay.
Other places I want to go and do, going back to the cold diving, I want to go and do Iceland. So Iceland has there's one dive there that I really want to do, and it's between. I don't know if you know this, but Iceland is over two tectonic plates, and they're two of the tectonic plates that are year by year getting further and further apart, and there's a rift through between these two tectonic plates, and you can and it's created this valley in Icelandic crystal clear ice water, essentially.
You can't see my face at the moment, but I'm ready to jump out of a window or something, because it sounds amazing and atrocious at the same time.
I know everyone listening can't see, but I'll try and find a picture for you while I'm talking.
Yeah.
But no, it's literally, it's about, you've got over 100 to 200 metres visibility, so it's like snows where it's crystal clear water, and although it's blooming cold, you're literally in between two tectonic plates, and it's just, it looks absolutely amazing. I'd love to do that.
But in Mother Earth, basically. Going down into... not essentially the core of Earth, but you're going into a cracking Earth, basically.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
So it's literally between two tectonic plates. It's like you've got two cliff walls on either side of you, and just look at how crystal clear this water is. If it wasn't for the bubbles, you wouldn't know that the people were even in water.
So Jack's just showing me it on his phone, but if you want to Google it, you can Google...
I just typed in Iceland rift diving and put it on images.
Okay.
Iceland rift.
Just for those people who want to kind of look that up.
Yeah.
We will put some notes down
I'll send some links to you.
So animals-wise, what have you encountered? Have you had any near misses with anything?
A couple. So obviously I've seen a fair amount. One of my favourite best things I've ever seen was I saw manta rays. So I was diving in the Maldives a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And the Maldives is known because it's the middle of the Indian Ocean almost.
I've been there, I know it, yeah.
But it's known for its diving as well. It's another place. It's one of its main tourist exports.
Is it?
It's diving. We went out and we went to see the manta rays. And manta rays, they look like sort of a normal ray, if you don't know what they look like.
Yeah.
They look like a normal ray, sort of diamond shape with their sort of wings, fins, whatever
you call them. Yeah, it could be big, can't they?
And they've got the front of them, it's got sort of these two scoop antennas underneath them almost. I don't know how to explain them. But they can grow up to sort of like, I think the largest ones recorded are like 8 meters in width, which is mental. But we were diving, and they're really peaceful, calm animals, but we're diving in sort of a 2 or 3 meter ray comes past, and they sort of do loops in the water, because that's the way they like filter feed on plankton, similar to whales and all that. So they'll just open their mouth up and just do loops and just collect in everything. And they're just really majestic animals. They're crazy.
They didn't try and attack you.
No, they're really gentle. You get too close and they'll swim off. And they'll go way deeper than I can ever go. And then we were diving. We actually weren't diving, but we were off the back of a boat. And there was another manta ray that came up to the boat, and it was swimming around. And we all got in with our like just normal snorkeling kit on, and we spent 20 minutes, half hour in the sea with these manta rays that are just swimming around, really docile, similar to the way, not quite playing with us, but similar to the way that you see dolphins coming up.
Yeah.
Not being scared, not frightened. They just carry on doing what they're doing, and everyone sort of just sat there with their little GoPro cameras, just filming everything. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. We were in Maldives and we had dolphins coming up to the boat. They were swimming around the boat and diving.
I've never dived with dolphins. I was on the way back. So we do a thing called a liveaboard, which is live aboard the boat. Mm. And you spend like a week on a boat and you're doing, it's four divers, you're doing three, four dives a day. I've done a couple of them. We've done them in Egypt. And so on the back of this sort of big, almost yacht type boat, a dive boat. You sometimes they have to take you out in a rib, while the small inflatable boats take you to the actual dive site, drop you off, and then pick you up and take you back to your big boat. So we've just finished a dive. So most people have no air. Because you've been diving, you know you shouldn't really dive within a certain amount of time afterwards, like an hour or two, to get the nitrogen out of your body. And so we've just got out, so we can't dive again. We're not even back to our boat yet, and a pod of dolphins comes by. So we've just gone out of the water. But because they were there and we couldn't dive, they let us jump in with just our snorkel kit on.
Yeah.
And so I've been snorkeling with wild dolphins, but I've never dived with wild dolphins. I'd love to. Egypt's where I've got most of the life that I've dived with, though. I've had a couple encounters with sharks, which have been amazing, absolutely amazing. Oh, I'm not going to lie to you, I was bricking it at one point.
How close was you to those?
Probably about as close as we are now.
Really?
There was this one, and there's this type of shark called the... It was the oceanic black tip. Oceanic white tip. Black
tip. I don't know anything about
it. I can't remember if it was a black or white tip. It's an oceanic, basically, is what was we showed there, oceanic shark. And they're quite high in the sort of predator level of sharks.
Okay. So they do attack humans.
They're aggressive. Yeah. Right. They have, not too long ago, a year ago, they have attacked people in Egypt. This is actually only about 2 weeks after the encounter. I'm now talking about 2-3 weeks after that same dive site got closed down from tourism because there was a couple shark attacks.
Really?
And so the thing with sharks is these sort of sharks, they have things called pilot fish, which are the ones that sort of, they almost have like a mutual bond between them. They're the ones that follow it around, eat the sort of the dead skin off the shark and the little bits. So they keep the shark clean. They get a feeding, so they sort of work together.
Yeah.
And then you can tell the age of a oceanic shark by the amount of pilot fish it's got around it. Mm-hmm. So it's collected more over the years, it's got more. So this was a juvenile. I don't even think it had one pilot fish on it. Maybe one. I can't remember exactly now. But so this shark, we're hanging at about 5 meters. We're doing a safety stop.
Yeah.
Before, so our boat is right above us. We're pretty much on the chain for the anchor of our
boat. So what's the safety stop for those listeners?
Again, if you know of the bends or decompression sickness, nitrogen in your body, it absorbs into your body fine, but it doesn't get out because it's under pressure.
Okay.
If you come up from a depth really quickly, that nitrogen then expands as a gas bubble in your bloodstream.
Ooh.
And so I've been told it's literally like having your blood boiled sort of thing. It's a horrible feeling, and you have to go into decompression chambers, and it can be very fatal.
I thought after this podcast I'd want to dive. As we're getting into this,
you get trained.
I'm getting more and more frightened from diving. I'm not frightened from a lot of things, but diving's not. I don't think it's going to be on my list anyway. Yes,
that's great. You'll love it.
Yeah.
So basically, you come up slowly, and you're fine. You just got to give the time for the nitrogen to get out of the blood system.
Yeah.
It's really nothing to worry about as long as you're just safe. But you have a thing. If you've been to a certain past sort of 18 meters or so, you're supposed to do something called a safety stop, which is you hang at 5 meters for 3 minutes. And you count, your computer literally has a, as soon as you reach 5 meters, it will start counting down for 3 minutes. Yeah. And you just hover at that sort of depth. It doesn't have to be exact. You can go to six, you can go to four. Yeah.
Unless there's a shark attacking you or coming up to you.
Even there, well, I mean, yes, if you're in immediate danger, you should probably get out, but you don't really want to. So anyway, we're hanging under this boat at like 5 meters, and there's this juvenile white tip, and it's swimming around, and there's sort of seven of us at this point. And we're all sort of spread out a little bit. Like I'm 3 or 4 meters from my mate. There's another mate of mine a couple meters on from him.
And you can see them, yeah?
Yeah, it's all nice and blue and open. And I can just about see the bottom. It's probably about 40 meters. So I can see my boat. I can see the chain. Mm-hmm. There's a small current pushing us to one side, but you sort of just swim against it a little bit and you're back to where you were. It's nothing to worry about. But this shark sort of starting weaving in between us all. Not circling like you'd see in a film, but he's inquisitive about us. And sharks, when they get aggressive, what they do is they got their two pectoral fins, which are normally out. They'll turn them into a V going down.
And
he starts doing this, and he starts getting close, and then next thing I know, he's sort of
nudging you. Was he?
They start, and so, yeah, you can tell just by the way they're moving there. Instead of being nice and smooth, they'll sort of take sharp turns and whatnot.
Yeah,
and
you can tell from the move that it's not a placid.
Yeah, so he swims. He's come from one of my mates. He's probably about 12, 15 meters over from me, and he's swimming towards me. But he's probably swimming. He's swimming like he's going to go past me, about 4 or 5 meters away. And then he literally gets to right in front of me, and he does a sharp 90-degree turn at me. And at this point, I had a camera on, and the camera's sort of on my chest height. And at this point, I'm filming him.
So are you hands free, or are you not?
So I've got one hand free, but at this point, I'm sort of filming him, and he's going across. I'm like, this is amazing. And then he turns at me, and I bricked it. I didn't drop the camera, but the camera went down. Like I took my hand, I sort of tilted back, and I swear to God, I got nose to nose to this oceanic shark, like maybe 40 centimeters, nose to nose.
Yeah.
And then he turned off again and went past me. But I squared off with a shark. Is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Oh God. And
Was your dad there at that point?
But again, as I say, we're all fairly open, so he's probably about 10 meters from me, I reckon, something like that. It was at that point that I got out of the water. My dive was over at that point. This shark's getting more and more aggressive. I didn't actually see this, but my mate got the footage, because after that I sort of turned,
because he had a camera as well, did he?
Yeah, most of us had cameras, so I saw this, and he faced off to me, and I sort of went, I'm out, guys. I'm going to go. So I went and got out of the water. And I was talking to you guys afterwards. And this shark, he started nudging my mate. Literally, he started nudging my mate's fins and all that. Like, sort of poking him in the leg with his nose and everything. And that's when they all got out as well.
Yeah.
So this shark was getting a bit aggy.
Yeah, because shark's teeth are quite sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone actually kicked that shark, but right before we arrived. So we couldn't avoid going there because he was under our boat. We had to get out on our boat. So we couldn't avoid going there, but...
So the guys on the boat, the guys that own the boat, do they say that we don't recommend you go in?
No, it's a specifically designed tour for divers. Okay. So they take you to this place and we want to see these sharks.
I
want to see that shark.
Yeah.
So we want to go to these dive locations. But they tell you, you have a brief before you dive, and they tell you like, if it should be fine, don't get too close. If it comes up to you, sort of go upright, as if you're big, and they might wear off. A lot of bubbles disturb the water. So that should disturb it as well. But so there's this fairly new diver, and he's with an instructor from our boat. And this shark's pretty much circling them, and he's sort of nudging them. And so the dive guide, who knows what he's doing, is the one that gave us the brief, sort of goes upright, blows loads of bubbles and everything. And this shark wouldn't go away. So the guy literally kicked this shark to get it away from them so they could get out. But then we swam up like 2 minutes later because we had to get out of the water. So this aggressive shark has literally just been kicked in the face, and I'm now squaring off with it.
it's never going to end well, is it?
No.
So I wonder if that shark attacked anyone that day, because
I don't know about that day.
Because a wasp goes around and it gets upset by different people, and then eventually that day it will sting someone.
Maybe it might go off and sort of, I don't know if sharks act like people, but it might go off and chill out. It might just get aggressive and snap at someone.
Gonna do some shark yoga or something.
Shark yoga
and chill out. Yeah, no, it's interesting though. Like I am fascinated by sharks, and it sounds to me like you're quite, you know, your animals, your creatures, and your fish and stuff like that. I mean, we went deep sea fishing in Maldives. We didn't do any diving, but we did see divers out there. And I remember we were quite far out. I felt really sick. I feel really sick every time I get on a boat that goes out
further.
Yeah, seasickness. So we were there, and Josephine, my wife, we were on honeymoon actually in Maldives. She said, "What's that?" to the guy, and the guy said, "Oh, it's a tortoise or a turtle?
Turtle.
Sea turtle.
Sea turtles."
And so he says, he turns the engine on, he goes over there, and it's wrapped up in fishing. It's still alive.
Yeah, but right? it's all caught up in nets
and stuff. So I've got a picture of it. I'll post that online as well. It took three of us to haul this thing out onto the edge of the boat.
They can be real big and heavy.
Yeah, and we cut it all away. Yeah. It had a little bit of a scuff on its neck, but nothing major.
Yeah,
and we let it go back out.
Good.
Josephine's sitting there. She's happy as you know. Yeah. She's seen it and she saved it.
Seen and saved.
And we're doing our part for the planet.
Yeah,
and. I turned around and I says to the yacht master guy, I says, "How old was that?" He said, 80, 90 years old.
Oh, tell us. It was
huge. I mean, when you see the photo, you see me.
Yeah.
I was smaller then, but it's still a massive,
big
creature.
Yeah. I've dived with a couple of turtles again in Egypt. And
you've seen them, have you, as well? Yeah.
Stroked one on the back, shouldn't have done. But so I've encountered some turtles there. They're really nice creatures to be around, really majestic, just so calm.
Yeah. So what's the worst dive you've had then?
Oh God, worst dive I've had. What is the worst dive I've had?
Why was it bad?
Let me think.
You might not have had one.
Oh no, I know. So we're out in Malta, and for the most part, it was a great dive.
Yeah.
So we're out in Malta, and one thing I don't like about diving is deep blue. So if I'm swimming, I've got to do a swim out to something.
Yeah.
But I'm going away from the shore.
Yeah.
So I can't see it, but it's also quite deep. So I can't see the bottom. I can't see behind me. There's nothing around me. It's just blue. I get
so, so you're leaving the shore.
So yeah. So
you're walking, are you?
No. So I'm already in the water, but I'm swimming away from land.
Okay.
So it's getting deeper below me.
Yeah.
So it gets to the point that I can't. All I can see is blue.
Yeah.
I look left, right, forward, back. I can only see blue.
Okay.
You take a compass. So you've got an underwater compass. And you take a compass bearing, and you swim. And you spoke pretty much. So you know that it's that way. You set up your compass with the numbers, and you've got a line you follow, and you literally sit there and you're swimming with looking at your compass constantly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate it. I'm not great with the compass. I get disorientated. I sort of start to veer to the left or right. I absolutely hate it.
A compass is the way you find shipwrecks then?
If you have to do a swim out to something, yeah. Normally, if they're set up for divers, they'll have a buoy on the top floating on the surface. So you could get there on the surface.
Okay.
Or take a boat. Or if it's not so deep that you can stay at the bottom the whole time, you can follow like usually a map, and it sort of says, I'll go this way, come to this sort of significant large rock that looks like a some or whatever. It depends on what the dive is. But so we're taking this dive, and it's probably down at 60 meters depths. Not the dive, I mean at the bottom where I'm at the moment. So we can't go down. So we're swimming through the blue. And we got a mate, and we get there fine. He takes the compass bearing, he's good with the compass. So he takes the bearing, he gets us there. We have 40 minutes on this dive. At this point, my dad has a rebreather the same as me. But at this point, I didn't have a rebreather. I only had a normal cylinder. So he's all right with there. He's got plenty.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also got a bailout, which is a small 3-litre cylinder strapped to his side just in case something happens and he needs some more air. Because you're supposed to with a unit. If it fails, you have a bailout. That's fine. I've got a normal cylinder and a bailout with me just because I want extra air because I want to try and keep up with the guys who are on rebreathers.
Yeah.
So we're diving, and I'm getting to the point where my main cylinder's getting a bit low. So I say to my dad I'm diving with, I go, right, that's it. I'm done with this shipwreck now. We should get back because I'll get low on air soon.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, okay. Me and my dad are renowned. There's literally an ingoing group joke that my dad can't follow a compass. He goes round and round. You could put a rope in the middle of the sea and he'll find a way to go just round it. Following a straight line, he'll go round it. It's an ongoing
joke. Really?
Round and round and round. And I'm just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now got to take the compass bearing back to shore.
Yeah.
And so we're swimming through this deep blue. I'm already uncomfortable because I'm in deep blue.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we're going away from a shipwreck, right? Next thing you know, we're facing the shipwreck. We've somehow done a complete U-turn in the water and we're back at the thing. but that's taking us like 5-10 minutes. I've just used 5-10 minutes of air. I'm starting to get low on air.
Yeah.
So we're like, all right, we'll take it again. Take the compass bearing. We check with someone else who we know who's still on the dive wreck. He was already there.
Yeah.
He went out with us.
What wreck was this?
This is the Farood. So it's a big, I think it was a military vessel. I think it was military. I can't remember that.
What year were we talking did this sink then? Are we talking ancient or are we talking...
I can't remember. I'll have a look.
World War II?
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
But no, so we're swimming back from this and we've come across this bloody boat again.
Yeah.
And so we check with the guy who's still there.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, it's that way. Off you go. You got the right numbers. And so we start swimming again. And we're swimming for like 5-10 minutes and we're just in blue. And we're like, we should start seeing the land by now.
Yeah.
So my dad pops his head up.
Above the sea.
He goes to the surface. Yeah. And I'm not going to make it sound over dramatic. We're in the middle of the ocean. But we're nowhere near where we should be. So I'm now running low on air. Like I'm using, I didn't have a bailout at that time. So I've taken my dad's bailout, which he should have for safety, because I'm running low on air. I'm starting to panic. I hate being out in the blue. We can't figure out where we're going. Literally, I'm pretty sure. So say this thing here was the dive wreck and lands here. So the first time we've gone towards land and turned back to this, and we're like, oh, crap, we'll have to go back. So we start going this way. We've done this.
We
ended up further away.
Jesus, yeah.
Eventually, we had about a 300-meter circle. We gave up, realised that I wasn't going to make it on air anymore.
Yeah.
So we just gave up and had to go to the surface of the water and do about a 300-meter swim with all your kit on. I don't know if you've ever done, but surface swimming 300 meters, right, with all this kit is exhausting.
Exhausting, is it?
It was such a long swim, but we just couldn't make it.
So you have to be quite fit to be in the sea in the first place.
Bad it sounds considering I'm a diver. I hate swimming and I'm an extremely poor swimmer. I'm a really poor swimmer.
So can you can't swim?
I can swim. Not for very long and not very far. I hate it. It's exhausting. My hands cramp up.
So I thought that would be a requirement.
Well, no, because you've got your fins on. So that's all you can propel yourself with them. You've got a jacket and everything. Keeps you either afloat or at the right sort of buoyancy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the main thing, you have air. You can breathe. You just mosey on at whatever pace you want.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, that was definitely my worst dive.
Okay. And the best dive?
There's a handful. It depends on what you want to go on. Like, I mean, there's different shipwrecks. So there's the one in Cyprus, the Zenobia. That's a really cool dive.
What's it called?
The Zenobia. That was a car ferry that was coming from, I think it was Sweden, and it was supposed to be going past Cyprus, but they did a stopover because they had an issue. And then it sat in the dock for ages, and the sort of harbour master went, I'm not going to let that sink in my dock. Take it out. So they took it out, and about a mile offshore, it sunk. And it still had all these cars on it. It was a car and lorry ferry, and it still has all the cars on it. It's sunk. It's at a 90-degree angle now, and you can swim through it. It's still got a carpet on it in the canteen area. You can see where all the toilets were.
So you saw all that, yeah.
So I swam right the way through that. It's absolutely awesome.
Really? What cars did it have?
A lot of the cars have sort of rusted away, or sort of because the cars are a lot smaller, they sort of all weren't strapped down. They'd sort of rusted away and sort of fallen apart and whatnot. But there were some big flatbed lorry trucks on there and that, which I saw.
So where is that? Is that North Cyprus or South?
South. It's not too far from, what's the airport on the south?
Larnaca.
Greek side.
Larnaca, you got Paphos.
I think it was Larnaca. It's not far off Larnaca from Larnaca.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So have you got a map? You've got a map of all these shipwrecks that you, or is there a website?
I actually do. So again, you can sort of Google shipwrecks in this place, this country, that country, best shipwrecks to dive and all that. But my girlfriend for Christmas last year actually got me one of those, a wall map. It's by the same people that do those ones. You can scratch away the country you mean to.
Oh, yeah.
And it's literally a dive map. It's not a scratch away one, but it's a dive map. And you can and it's got little pointers coming off of like most of the countries.
Yeah.
In the world, saying that like the top sort of 3, 4, 5 dives.
Yeah.
Then it's got like a little key with little symbols at the bottom saying like what sort of animals you can see and this and that. So I do have a dive map here, but no, typically we sort of just, as I say, you'll get recommendations or whatever, and then if you know you're going somewhere that you haven't been before, you either get there and talk to the locals or you Google it.
So have you been to any ancient ones, like ancient shipwrecks and stuff? Or even plane crashes?
I haven't been to any, not other than the quarries where they've been put there on purpose, I haven't been into any plane crashes.
Are there any?
Probably. Almost definitely. I don't know of them, but they're almost
there
definitely.
There must be some World War II bombers down there or something. Surely. You know what I mean?
I've come across tanks.
What, real tanks?
Tanks
what,
underwater.
In the sea?
Yeah.
In the sea.
So there was these tanks called the Valentine tanks that they tried to... They basically put like a almost a hovercraft-type skirt on these tanks.
Yeah.
Tried to sail them across to France. And again, I think they made it like a mile before they just sunk.
Really?
Yeah. But so there's these two tanks off the south coast of England, down about 30 metre deep.
Yeah.
And they're pretty cool. They're two of those sort of... They're almost my first like really good wreck dive that
yeah.
I did, because it was a long time ago. And one of them's got the top turret popped off of it, and the turret's sort of upside down, and you're swimming over it, and there's this massive eel that's living inside one of these tanks. And when I say massive, I mean it's probably about 15 foot long.
Really?
It poked its head out, and I swear to God, its head was the size of a horse's head. It was massive. Big old blue conger eel, it's called.
Bloody hell. Oh. And this is just off the coast
of England, south coast.
Of England and
yeah.
south coast,
I can't remember
it?
Where exactly, but yeah.
Wow. So there's a World War II ship, isn't there, off the coast of Kent somewhere, where they've said if it's full of bombs and if
oh,
it goes off.
I know
off,
that one, yeah. I know of it.
I mean, I'm dead. I think I'm dead because I think most of Kent would get the
shock and...
The shock
yeah.
and stuff. Have you been down there?
I haven't dived.
Are you allowed to dive around that bit?
It's probably not allowed to dive. Stuff like that. You can dive sites can get locked off, for if it's sort of dangerous or whatever. So I probably don't know if you could dive that, to be honest.
No, I wouldn't. No. You wouldn't get me nowhere near it. I'm saying you, not me.
I don't know. if it was locked off, I don't think I'd go and dive it. I'd be interested to see it.
Mm. Mm.
But yeah.
So if you found like diamonds and jewels and stuff on a dive, right?
Yeah.
Can you keep it?
I don't think so. I think you essentially have to, it's the same as if you like uncover a load of jewels or whatnot when you're digging around in a garden or whatever. I think you have to declare it to UK customs or whoever, not customs. I don't know who it'd be, but you'd have to declare it to officials and then it pretty much, you might get a reward for finding something.
Mm.
But of course, there are times when people have sort of like, pinch stuff off of shipwrecks, whether it be literally just a porthole window or I know someone, they went on a dive and they found a still corked bottle of wine. They found a bottle of wine underwater from whenever it sunk, and so they took that back. They kept it. I don't think they should have done, but I think they did. But yeah, so people do pinch stuff here and there.
People are not going to know though, are they? I mean, yeah, if you...
But so if you're diving out in Egypt or wherever and you go onto a really famous wreck called the Cecil Gorm, it was a World War II ship.
Mm-hmm.
It was an English cargo ship. It was full of like guns, vehicles, two trains, or like train locomotives were on it.
Yeah.
Boots, everything. And I think people have taken stuff off that, but since then it's sort of been declared protected and all that, and you're not supposed to take anything off it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, this is so far off the coast that the only way to get to it is by boat. And the skipper, the captain, the boat's crew won't let, if you take
okay.
them, they won't let you take it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're not supposed to take stuff.
So you're not supposed to really take.
I think
take...
what the sort of, one of the phrases that's heard a lot is take nothing but memories, leave nothing but bubbles.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. Because I tell you what, if I found a diamond, that's going in my pocket. I mean, years ago...
You're not even supposed to take, like, shells. Like, a normal, like, if you find, like, a shell on the seabed or whatever and you think it's a nice looking shell, you're not even supposed to take that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I found a suitcase full of money. It must have been late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I was running around my estate in Peckham playing kiss chase or something with girls, and I came across an open case, blood spattered on the wall in a block of flats.
Mm.
And I heard the sirens and ran off. I didn't grab anything. But I always regret that. I thought, bloody hell, where would I be now if I took that money and that, or was it a drug deal that went wrong and someone got killed, kind of thing. So
stumbling across some money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wouldn't have turned out well, I don't think.
No.
So, okay. So, so you mentioned cave diving. You haven't done it yet, but you want to do it.
No, I've been in sort of small openings in caves. So just as sort of the sea erodes away at the side, you get sort of almost like cathedral-type caves where it's actually the entrance is underwater a bit. So you go in, there's a really big entrance. There's one big sort of almost like a hall, and you can like pop your head up and it's nice and open in there, and that's really cool.
Mm.
You get nice colours coming through from the sea and all that. But I've been to stuff like that. I've been through some like in like swim ways where, again, it's very open. It's not really, I wouldn't consider it cave diving because it's maybe 10 meters of cave. And then it's open again. It's very open. You're not like to get snagged or anything. So I wouldn't consider that cave diving. I like the idea of doing open caves, like I said, the cenotes earlier. I don't think I'd really want to do proper, like, tight cave diving, the sort of stuff where you've got to wriggle through, take your kit off underwater, like, to pass it through before you and all that.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some films on that, and that freaks me out.
Yeah, that sounds very, very dangerous to me.
No, I don't fancy doing that. Shipwrecks are more interesting to me.
Yeah, so mostly shipwrecks you like.
So I'm different to my dad. My dad likes to go and see life. He'll like to go and do a reef and see loads of fish and all that. I prefer to go and see shipwrecks.
Yeah.
I just think they're fascinating to see.
What about ancient cities? So there are some under the sea, aren't there? Have you been to any of those?
I've not been to any of them. No, I've been to a couple of places where there's like underwater statues where you've had an artist go and do that, and that's pretty cool. But I've never done any sort of ancient cities or civilizations or anything that have flooded in underwater.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, we've pretty much answered a lot of the stuff. I mean, in different variations, we've covered 1 through to 9. So where are you intending on diving next? Where's the place?
Well, I'm off to Lanzarote in March.
Yeah,
that should be good. That's got a nature, almost like an oceanic version of a nature reserve, so there's no fishing allowed there or in the part we're diving, so you get some real big life.
Your dad would be happy then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So you get some big life out there. So I'm going there in March. Oh, no, I haven't actually got anything planned for the moment. As I said, I'd love to go and do cenotes in Mexico.
Yeah.
As pure diving holiday alone, I think that's probably top of my list of things.
So when you go diving, who does your girlfriend do?
Well, I've only been with her just over a year now, so I mean that was never a worry for the person 9 years before that. And then recently, so if I go diving somewhere in the UK or whatever, if it's the sort of thing where the guys come along and all the, what they bring their wives along as well, she come with me. They go to the spa, or do whatever they want, and
then
we go diving.
So
When we went to Cyprus though, she hadn't done it before. I actually got her diving twice in Cyprus.
Did she enjoy it?
Yeah, she really enjoyed it. So I pretty much ditched her on our first day on holiday. So we got to Cyprus, and then we got there early in the morning, and so we had some time in the day. So I went, I want to go and check out, because it's something I thought we might have to book in advance.
Yeah.
But I didn't know until I went and spoke to the guys. So I wanted to go there on the day we arrived. I went to chat to these guys. She came along and went, she's interested in trying diving. I am a diver. Here's my cert. I want to do this wreck. There's an obium. And then that's fine. And then I went, what about she wants to do a try dive? And then he was like, well, we're going on to the wreck tomorrow. So this is our first proper day on holiday, our second day in total, right? And I've literally just gone, yes, I will be there tomorrow. What about her? And he went, oh, I can, because he was going to take 3 instructors, he only needed 2. The third one was just going to go because he had nothing to do. He was like, oh, I can just make that instructor stay behind and he can do the try dive over there while you go diving. So she went and did a morning's diving, try diving in the, like in a really small lagoon, like sort of calm area that you could take a first timer. And then I went off on the boat for the whole day, first day on the holiday, and I just ditched her to go diving. But so she tried that and she loved it. And then later in the holiday, towards the end of the holiday, we went diving again. And she had to do another try dive because she hadn't done our certification.
Okay.
But because of the same group, they knew that she'd be all right. And then I just sort of went and rented the kit and went on the same dive. So I dived with her as well. But so she sort of said that when we're on holiday, she'll happily do some dives, not as many as I do, but she'll do a couple of dives. And other than that, she'll sit around the pool, do what she wants, really.
Yeah. It's ideal a whole day, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's the best advice you've ever had? This is something I always ask all my guests.
I was thinking about this for diving, these questions, and this I did struggle here. Cause
it doesn't have to be for diving. It could be in life in general or for diving.
I'll stick to diving just because I've thought about it a little bit. And it's a weird one because as far as advice goes, it's more the way we've... I've got a mate, one of the guys that I dive with a lot. He's really experienced. He's been diving for 20, 30 years. He's lived at sea pretty much for a lot of time. He's a really experienced, really good diver. And it's just sort of watching the way he does things. But I was thinking about it. One thing that I got advice on, and it was about the sort of kit that I was using. It was the jacket I've got.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, your BCD is your buoyancy controlled device. And most BCDs... they inflate around the back, so you fit it like a life jacket. They've got pockets down by your sides as well, but that bit inflates too. So the bit that holds all the air in that inflates is called the bladder.
Mm-hmm.
The entire bladder inflates all around the waist as well. Mm-hmm. So when you're in the water, if it's a little bit inflated, it starts getting inflated around the sides. It's a bit tight, and also it means that your dive profile, you're not like horizontal in the water. You're almost at an angle.
Yeah,
he said, get a wing. A wing doesn't have those side bits. It's only like a donut on your back. So yeah. when it's inflated, it holds you from the back only. There's no lifting at your front,
yeah.
which means that your profile is really flat. And having a good profile when you're diving, it makes things so much easier. It really does. I can't really explain. It's just a really good way to dive. You're a lot more streamlined. You can fit through more things.
Okay.
So that was probably the best advice, was get a wing, and I did, and I will never go back to a BCD.
Okay. What's the worst advice you've had?
This is actually one of the things that you're taught in your very first thing in your open water, and it makes sense. They tell you when you're diving, when you learn to dive, you should always carry a snorkel, or at least they used to anyway. Because then if you're at the surface, you can, and you're waiting for a boat to pick you up or whatever, and you just sat there at the top, or you're swimming to a surface destination, you're doing a surface swim,
yeah.
and it's a bit choppy, you don't have to use up your air before you dive. You have a snorkel, doesn't matter if you get splashed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I bloody hate snorkels. They get in the way because they hang off the side of your face, they twist around, all of a sudden the tip of your snorkel's upside down and get in the way of your view.
Yeah.
Like, you've got, because diving is quite a clunky kit.
Yeah.
So you're trying to reach for things here, there, you're underwater, you've got limited visibility.
Yes.
Right? And then you've just to add to all that, you've got this shaft just spinning around by your ear, hitting you in the face,
yeah.
trying to grab stuff. You grab that, it gets in the way. You can get pocket snorkels, but even then they just take up space. So the advice is actually part of your training is to use a snorkel. And I don't think I've had a snorkel on my dive kit in 9 out of the 10 years. Not even that.
Really?
I hate snorkels. They just get in the way.
Okay. All right. Tell the audience where they can find out more about your diving and the types of diving, your type of diving in particular, really.
Well, so my diving, as I said, the recreational rebreather diving. So there's a couple types of these rebreather. I currently dive on a Hollis Explorer, which I'll send you a link to, a picture of or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good dive piece of kit. There's also stuff like the Poseidon Mark VI, I think,
mm-hmm.
which is another one. But you only really need to type in to sort of search like recreational rebreathers, recreational mm-hmm. rebreathers. So or find your local dive shop. Anyone who runs a dive shop will know at least the basics on that stuff,
yeah.
where you can look into it.
Yeah.
There's a guy that he pretty much helped design the unit that I dive on. He's the UK expert on it. He trains like all sorts of people on it for company purposes and for like normal diving.
Okay.
Trevor from TAL Scuba, T-A-L Scuba.
Okay.
He's good to contact about all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's sort of my diving, but just in general, there's actually a lot more diving than you'd think. Like there's a dive shop in Letchworth, which yeah. is up the river from us. There's a yeah. dive shop in Stevenage. There's St Albans. They're everywhere. They really are.
Okay. So find them. So if someone wants to start diving, just as a beginner,
yeah, just starting up diving, yeah, just to be honest, mate, just search your local dive, like search for your local dive.
So is it a paddy? They're looking for a paddy score.
Paddy is an option. So paddy, in my opinion, are a little bit expensive. Everything costs more than it should for a small certification. But paddy are a very well known dive association. In the UK, you got BSAC, which is your British Sub Aqua Association, community, something like that. So that's BSAC. They do, and then there's a lot more sort of the modern type where you do all your courses online, and then you sign up to the shop, to the actual dive shop, and they take on your real dives. So because you do have paperwork too as well when you learn to dive.
So this is online training.
So
is it,
well, the paperwork side of it is. So okay. like you do have to take a small exam sort of thing.
Okay.
Fill out knowledge questions. It's called
right.
And there's a few online places. SSI or RAID are both mm-hmm. good. I've started looking into using SSI if I want to do any more courses. And then a lot of shops will sort of they'll log on, see as an instructor, see your profile that you've done, all the coursework, and you just need to do the physical dives, and then they'll take you on the dives. But yeah,
okay.
There's a lot of material out there. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so mostly Google stuff, really. And just
once or twice a year, they've also got like in the big exhibition halls and all that. They have something called a dive show where they put all the stands up. They've got all sorts of diving.
Where's this Olympia or what's called somewhere like that?
London
XL.
That's the one.
So that'd be XL, yeah. And
there was one in Birmingham for a while, but I don't know if they still do that.
NEC Birmingham.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big one, that.
National Exhibition Centre, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember if they might have taken the London one, but they took one of them away.
Yeah.
But at least once a year they have the dive show. And so it's like, we go there if we want to go, and we know we're all looking for a new bit of kit because they'll have all the sale on.
Yeah, you get discounts. They'll
have show discounts, or if you want to find out more about this, they'll have holiday providers there for dive holidays and all that. So if you're local to that sort of stuff, you can always go there, or you know someone that dives and you can go there with them. They can show you, to introduce you to someone local who can give you tips on where to dive out, who to dive with, and whatnot.
Yeah, sure. So I think we're finished, really. Yeah. I mean, you've answered a lot of my questions. You still haven't convinced me that I should try it.
Do it. It's the most amazing thing you'll ever do.
I love it. We'll wrap it there. But eventually, one day, I probably might try. Just try it out and see. And
just a try dive. You're not going to go deep. It'll take you like 8 meters on the try dive.
I might do it in a couple of weeks' time in Dubai. If I do, I'll send you, I'll WhatsApp you, send you a picture of me in the diving gear. You'll be very pleased to see that, I'm sure. But
can't wait. It's not an attractive sport.
It's
not. I know you're thinking about all the models in there, but once they've got a hood on, a big suit, your tank strapped on, hoses going everywhere, you suddenly looking at this person going, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Surfing is what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, anything to do with the sea, really, I'm not too good at, really, to be fair. But that's because I was brought up in London, you know, and I'm a city boy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been a pleasure. It's been a real good pleasure talking to you about it, and hopefully the listeners will gain something from this. I'll definitely edit it and then get it out there as soon as I can. Okay.
Sounds good.
So thanks very much, Jack.
It's been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure chatting to you anyway, but definitely talking to you about your passions is definitely interesting and very inspirational. Definitely, you have inspired me. Not to dive, but you have inspired me.
I'll get you there.
Take care and see you guys all soon. Thank you.